So even if you have someone who's on hospice and expected to die after they've gotten vaccinated, if they do pass away, we've asked the CDC, do you want someone like that to be reported into the VAERS system? And they say, absolutely. They want anyone who has died post-vaccine for any reason to be put in. And you can see this in the trials as well. So for example, in the trials, one person was struck by lightning and it's reported in the trial data. It doesn't mean that the vaccine caused them to be struck by lightning. They just want to look for any potential reaction and any potential side effect. And then what the CDC does is they look at kind of the baseline rates of those arrhythmias, the baseline rates of lightning strikes, and they see if there's a difference between people who are vaccinated and not vaccinated to determine if that's a potential risk. And so all of that data, all of that VAERS data is on the federal website, on the CDC website, and can be seen by anybody in the public, and you can go and take a look at it. And so unfortunately, I think that people are misinterpreting that data as an adverse reaction when it's just humans being humans, and it's a way for us to make sure that we're reporting in data and for the CDC to be able to look at it and make sure there's no abnormal pattern seen in it.
So to be clear, the report that we're talking about came from this website, The Watchman, and for them to report that 5 people have died after getting the vaccine and more than 100 have had adverse reactions, does that sort of set back the vaccination effort to have that misinformation out there?
Well, I think just in the emails that I got and the time that they released it to today, there's a lot of people who emailed me who said, I read this and I'm really concerned. What does this mean? And so it takes time, which is I'm always happy to answer questions. And so is our team to explain where the data really comes from and why that 5 people did not die from the vaccine. 5 people died after vaccination. But looking through their history, they had multiple underlying health factors, and some of them were actually on hospice and expected to pass away. So I think it's important to put the data into context. And unfortunately, if it's not put into context, it can really scare people from potentially choosing to get a life-saving vaccine that can protect them from a virus that has been ravaging our world and has been causing incredible loss, both with people getting sick and dying, and unfortunately, the real economic consequences that comes to a lot of people being sick and being out as well. So we are all better off when we're healthy and well together, and this vaccine is a strong and useful tool to get there as quickly as possible.
Do you think that people will be so worried about it they just won't get the vaccine? And are you seeing that already?
I am worried that people won't get the vaccine because of misinformation. And I am concerned by the number of people who are expressing that information, they don't have the context behind it. And so they're taking that as that 5 people died from the vaccine itself. So I am concerned that that is not only going to slow down the vaccine efforts, but more importantly, for that individual trying to make an individual decision, it's really important that they have the information at hand and in full context to make the best decision for them and their family. And it's important to put that data into context.
There's still hundreds of appointments for vaccines available through February, at least here in South Central. And why isn't the state opening up those appointments for teachers or other groups? And are you getting a lot of pushback for that?
We are getting a lot of pushback for sure. We are pausing a bit on this senior level right now. We just really want to make sure that those 65 and older are vaccinated as soon as possible, partially because they are the group that represents, they're just over 10% of the population, but over 70% of the deaths and over 50% of the hospitalizations. And it's been challenging for some of them to navigate the website, the call line, and to know that it's their turn to get vaccinated. However, we understand that every single day we wait is a day that someone else isn't getting vaccinated. And that looms large on our shoulders. We want to get vaccines out fast and we want to do it fair. So we are looking at when we open up the next tiers overall. We've had a bunch of meetings with the communities. And in general, most communities are telling us that while there's appointments open, that many of them are getting filled up. It's just taking a bit more time and they have plans for a lot of that vaccine. But we are really trying to give it this week to see how many of those appointments are filled. We will be looking at the data next week and then really making a decision about where we move forward.
When can we anticipate the opening of additional tiers for eligibility?
Yeah, I think that mid-February we'll be communicating kind of some clarity on the next tiers, as well as sharing the information about what 1C is looking like, so people kind of know what's up and coming next. As I think many people are aware, there's a third vaccine now going through the FDA review process. And so we also want to see what that looks like, because that will also change our March allocation to be able to see if we can move and kind of move through more tiers more quickly. I suspect that some communities will be opening up additional vaccine sites in February to the beginning part of the next tier. However, I think most communities will be moving into the next tier with the March allocation.
All right, that was Alaska's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ann Zink. Dr. Zink, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the great questions.